Hello, Senator Murkowski.
Yes, it is me.
Hey, welcome. You are on right now on KSDP, the voice all over the Eastern Aleutians. Thank you so much for giving your time this morning. We really appreciate that.
Great pleasure to be with you. I'm looking forward to being home, headed Alaska way in about an hour or so here. We wrapped up the business of the Congress, finished up yesterday late, and House is done. So the good news is that we will have an opportunity to be back in the state for about another 6-8 weeks, which is great. I'm looking forward to it.
Good. I was just actually talking to my wife last night after we talked yesterday on the phone about how I do not envy your schedule or the busyness that must just surround being a senator of the United States. That's quite a hectic load you got on there.
Well, it is a big responsibility, but it is a great honor and a privilege to serve Alaskans, and I am thankful for that opportunity to serve every day. But the travel does end up wearing. It's a long haul from one side to the other, but I wouldn't give up the time in Alaska for anything. So
good. Well, that's what you'd like to hear from someone who's doing it. And as into segueing right there into that, you're trying to do it again. You are up for re-election this year after your historical write-in campaign success that you had, last 7 years ago? And you are once again finding yourself in a crowded field of candidates. And I wanted to talk to you about a couple of issues, but first just give you a chance to kind of speak your piece and have your platform out there for the people of the Aleutians East.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to people by way of not only your station and all that offers, but I often have an opportunity to get out into the region. I have been hosted by the community of King Cove. I've been out there to Sandpoint. There are some of the communities that I have yet to get out to, but recognizing that we have a broad part of the country to cover, and not as much time as I would like to be able to get there to be able to talk to folks by way of the radio station at KSDP is greatly appreciated. It has been 6 years since my last election. The 6 years has gone by incredibly fast, and seems hard to believe that I'm back in the thick of a campaign, but I am. We had very strong numbers in the Republican primary several weeks ago, and now I am going forward in the general election with about five other candidates that are vying for the seat. I have been working hard for the past 6 years in a way that I hope Alaskans feel has been in their best interest, and working on the things that we care about, making sure that we've got good jobs for Alaskans, making sure that our families and our communities are healthy. I have been privileged to serve as the chairman of the Energy Committee now for the past 2 years, and in that capacity, I have advanced a bipartisan energy bill working with my colleague from the state of Washington to craft a bill that will bring significant benefits to Alaska. We're an energy-producing state, but we're also one of the highest-cost energy states, and that can hamper our ability to engage in business or to just run a household. So I have worked hard to advance Alaska's energy interests and energy priorities through my position there. I've also been honored to be a member of the Senate Indian Affairs Committee for the full time that I've been here in the Congress since I came back in 2003. And that's a position that I'm very honored to serve in, representing Alaska's indigenous peoples on matters that they care about, whether it is health care or food security issues or how we deal with some of the social problems that are afflicting not only our cities but our villages, whether it's opioids or substance abuse, and working on these initiatives, again, trying to build healthy families and healthy communities. I have also been very fortunate to be a member of the Senate Appropriations Committee, and I serve as the chairman of the Interior Committee. And in that capacity, I have the ability to set the agenda for some of the spending priorities, whether it is ensuring that within the IHS we have sufficient levels of funding for Indian Health Services, working to make sure that our federal government honors the commitment that it has made to healthcare through full contract support costs, something that we've fought for a long period of time. I'm also very engaged in the other committees on which I serve on the Appropriations Committee, and have been making certain that we are doing right by our military men and women and those who serve us, and ensuring that our veterans get the care and the respect that they have clearly earned. So when I think about my priorities for Alaska, they are Alaskan priorities. It is making sure that we have good jobs. It is making sure that we are able to access our lands for our own opportunities, and again, providing for the health and the safety of our residents around the state. So it's good to be able to be out in the communities, talking to folks one-on-one, visiting them in their workplaces, and just coming to better understand not only the challenges that we face as a state, but the very clear opportunities that we have.
Yeah, and there are quite a few struggles that the state's facing right now, and I'm sure it's interesting to try to figure out how much a federal or U.S. senator can do to play a role in the current fiscal situation. We've had on some state reps and talking about it, and even last week we had one of the candidates running for your seat as well, Joe Miller, came on, and he spoke a lot about it, which was interesting. But something that I am curious about, Senator, you know, with oil production going down, a lot of people are speaking about a post-oil economy here in Alaska, and the state's trying to struggle with what does that look like to balance the budget out of oil. Is there a desire for you, and do you see a possibility, and do you make it a priority, any efforts to get more oil into the pipeline to take a more pro-growth perspective on it? Or is that just not possible?
Oh, no, it clearly is possible, and that, again, is something that I've been doing in my capacity as chairman of the Energy Committee, is making sure that the resources that we have, whether it is oil, whether it is gas, whether it is our fish, whether it is our timber, whether it is our renewable resources, whether it's our human resources, that we are able to access them to our fullest capacity and to highest and best use. But before I speak to that, I'd like to just kind of hit on what can be done at the federal level when the state is facing some very, very significant financial downturn right now. I view so much a part of my job here as your senator to be able to provide a level of stability on the federal side when it comes to the revenues that come to the state. And I think this is particularly important for us to recognize that much of what we see in the state comes to us through federal dollars. For instance, highway funding is something that is significant for us in our state. Now, you might not think out in your region where you are there at the Aleutians on islands that roads and highway funding are a priority. But this is not just for the road system. This is also for ferry systems as well. Making sure that we had a six-year highway bill, basically a long-term funding forecast for the state of Alaska so that we could rely on that, so that we can anticipate and work to build out projects because we have the certainty of federal funding is key for us. Because right now, we know for sure that there's uncertainty at the state level. So the more certainty that we can provide, the better off we are. So the a six-year highway bill, something that we haven't done in a decade plus, was highly significant, and I was able to help move that to final passage through my position on the conference committee. Other examples where we can provide some level of predictability and stability for funding, whether it is, again, through increasing funds for IHS or through the BIA, through our contract support costs, so that the healthcare funding is not left in a level of uncertainty as it has in the past. That has got to be a priority because, again, funding at the state side is uncertain right now. Making sure that from an educational perspective, to the extent that the federal government has a role in those federal funds, making sure that, again, there is a level of support there. We finally got rid of No Child Left Behind and programs that or requirements that simply didn't work in small communities like you have out there in Sandpoint or King Cove. A federal one-size-fits-all doesn't work, so we were able to reform education policy that really helps bring back to the local communities, to the local school boards, kind of governance of our education and our systems again. So when you think about what can be done at the federal level to help the state at a time of fiscal uncertainty, it is to do everything that I can to provide for that certainty, whether it's, again, gaining access to our lands and to our resources, or working to provide for federal funds that come our way because of our constituencies, whether it is our Native people, whether it is our many veterans, whether it is our military. So this has been something that I've been focused on very, very keenly now as our state is struggling. Your second part of your question there about do we just have to accept that we are moving away from an oil-based economy? We are a state that is based on our resources. And when we came into statehood, it was with the understanding that as a state, we would be able to develop our own resources for our own benefit. They knew that we would never have significant population to sustain us from a tax base. So how else can we provide for ourselves? Well, it's effectively accessing our resources. So when we're limited by our own federal government in accessing, whether it is offshore, whether it is in the 1002 area of ANWR, whether it's within the National Petroleum Reserve, then it's important that we be pushing back on the federal government on these limitations that hold us back from achieving our own potential, working to build out our own resources for our own benefit. So I've been pretty aggressive with this administration in reminding them that Alaskans want to do more for themselves, but we need the federal government to get out of the way, to keep that promise as it related to access. And so I have just recently introduced legislation that has been around for a long while, but would allow us access to the oil reserves up in ANWR, that would provide for additional offshore leases in the Beaufort, in the Chukchi, that would help to facilitate permitting within the National Petroleum Reserve. These are efforts that will work to help us fill up the pipe. I am one that believes strongly that as a state that is entering that next phase where we've celebrated our 50th year as a state, but we're a state that is growing, and as we grow, we will diversify. But our natural resources will still be extraordinary, and our ability to be able to tap into them in a way that benefits our people, benefits our economy, and still protects our environment it has got to be an ongoing, and that's what I have made a priority.
Yeah, and that's obviously a priority for Alaska, and I think that you're in touch with that, and the rest of the state stands by you there as well. But as the state's matured over the last 50 years, almost and at the same exact time, there's been a maturing environmental movement that stands in kind of stark opposition to our desires. Do you think that this legislation that you've submitted will have any legs to run with this administration, given the current climate that it is, or is it going to wait to see what happens over the next presidential cycle?
Well, as a state, we've always had a healthy tension between those who seek to develop at all costs and those who would seek to preserve all aspects of our lands from an environmental perspective. When you think about how we built out our Trans-Alaska pipeline, there's some very healthy tension between the developers and the environmental community. And as a consequence, the final outcome was a pipeline that was built to very high environmental standards. And I think some 40 years later, we look at that as a model. It might have been kind of difficult working it through along the way, but what we have is a national infrastructure that is helping to deliver a resource to the rest of the country that benefits the country, that provides jobs for Alaskans and has been doing it in an environmentally sound and safe manner for decades. And so I think we need to recognize that we have always been surrounded by that healthy tension that says we cannot spoil our environment. And as a third generation Alaskan, believe me, I want to make sure that my sons have the same opportunity to love and treasure the land as I do. I have no interest in ruining it or fouling it for future generations. So how we're able to access our resources, do it in an environmentally sound and sensitive manner is our challenge. But think about the capabilities that we have. We are smart. We are always thinking one step ahead as Alaskans, oftentimes because we have to because of high costs, but we are thinking about technologies that will allow us to tap into resources that are there. When I talk about Alaska's potential in being leaders in microgrids, effectively taking small applications, whether it's several wind turbines combined with small hydro, and all of a sudden you've got a community that is no longer reliant on diesel for its generation. King Cove is a great example of what you can do. We're looking at other strong examples out there in the Aleutians for how we can tap into more of our renewables, whether it's the power of the currents and the tides or the wind or the geothermal. We have great capacity and capability, and I think we're in a transitional stage, if you will, where we're still trying to get many of these technologies that will be more to scale so that they will be economic to operate. It's hard right now, but hard has never stopped us before. So I look at this as yet another challenge for our state. And we've got a good track record in terms of how we have developed our fossil resources. And I think the technologies that are coming about almost weekly that allow us to do so in a more environmentally sound and secure way, those just allow us to do more. And at the same time, we work to move into areas where renewals provide us with great opportunity and promise. So I don't see this as mutually exclusive at all. I see Alaska's resource future as very bright.
Mm. Awesome. Well, I know that you're running. I only have such a limited time, but I wonder if we can do a lightning round where I throw out two questions and see what you can get off them, ma'am. There are two big ones for our area. So the lightning round here, number one, federal legislation or regulation, I should say, of marijuana as a Schedule I as Alaska and more states become recreationally pro on marijuana, and then two was the new decision to put Alaska Native lands into federal land trust. How do you feel about those two policy changes?
Well, on the marijuana, as you point out, Alaskans have voted to legalize marijuana for both medicinal and recreational. I have concerns about the health effects of recreational, and I have expressed those, but I also respect the desire of the voters. I do think we recognize, though, that there is a conflict between our state marijuana laws and our federal marijuana laws, and this goes across the board. The federal government has a policy that says that they will not prosecute those who sell or use marijuana when they're following the state laws. But it's important to recognize that there can be some second order effects, and the Justice Department still hasn't really addressed this yet. One example, and it's something that I am following right now with the Department of Justice, and this is when you go to purchase a firearm, you are asked on the form whether you use marijuana for medical purposes or recreational in accordance with the state law. And you're asked that on the form, and I know this because when I purchased my new shotgun several months ago, I'm looking at that, and I asked the owner there. I said, if because in Alaska now recreational marijuana is allowable, if an individual were to check this in the affirmative, is this somehow or other going to limit their ability to purchase a firearm? So I asked the Department of Justice to look at this, to revisit this policy, because I think that the mere use of marijuana should not require someone to forfeit their Second Amendment rights. And we're still waiting to hear back from Justice on that, but I will tell you that there was a recent Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decision that basically says that it is legal to enforce the firearms ban against those who use marijuana. So we're looking at this, trying to determine whether it's something that needs to see legislation. There's some other things with regards to marijuana that I'm watching. Most immediate to the federal nexus is access to the banking system by those who sell marijuana. This is something that right now the banking system is off limits, and so it begs the question: if you are in this new business, and you need to either take your proceeds to the bank, you have no ability to do so. This is something that we've been discussing at great length with other colleagues here, particularly my colleague from Oregon, about what may be done to address this. Another area that we're following closely is with regards to the VA and whether or not VA medical centers in states that allow for legalized marijuana, as Alaska does, whether they're allowed to counsel veterans on the use of medical marijuana. We've got a prohibition in law that prohibits the federal government from interfering with people who use medical marijuana when they're following state laws. But this is, again, something that we are following here. My office is very keenly. This is, as we know, this is new territory for the state of Alaska, and I think it's a lot more complicated than people may believe, given the way the federal laws work.
Oh, so absolutely.
That's kind of the situation with marijuana. And then very, very quickly, because I am going to have to run, but you mentioned the land into trust issue. I've had meetings just this week with the governor, with the lieutenant governor, and we have been talking about land into trust. The state and the Interior Department are having conversations about the issue with an eye to considering some specific regulations for Alaska. I think one point that I would like to make real quickly is I think one of the drivers behind the land into trust movement is the hope to attain more federal resources for public safety in rural Alaska. I have asked specifically the Interior Department and the Justice Department that if land is taken into trust in Alaska, does that mean that there will be additional resources sent to Alaska? And the response back that I have got from them is a pretty solid no, and that's because we're what's called a PL-280 state, which means that the state has jurisdiction to enforce its laws, even on land that it held in trust for tribes by the federal government. So this is an issue here, and just making sure that we understand the implications of land into trust is something that we're paying close attention. But having said that, trust land or not, we do need to address public safety concerns in rural Alaska and how we might be able to get federal resources to do that. We were able to include additional funding in the Interior Appropriations Bill, of which I chair, to support tribal court development in PL-280 states. So I think that that's a good start. But again, these are issues that are complex in Alaska. We appreciate that. But again, just because something's hard doesn't mean that we don't tend to it. We will be doing just that. But I thank you, Austin, for the time that you've given me this afternoon to share some of my views with Alaskans and your listeners, and hopefully we'll be able to do it again before the campaign comes to a conclusion.
The door is always open, Senator. Thank you so much for your time and your responses. We really appreciate it. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you so much. You have a great day out there.
You too. Have a good day and have a safe flight.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Bye. There it was. That was the Senator Lisa Murkowski on the air here on KSTP.